Welcome to the HR Locker podcast, the go-to source for discussions on the latest HR topics. Today, we're diving deep into the world of corporate responsibility and ESG with a special focus on the new Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive and what it means for companies across Ireland. Joining us is Patrick Meskell from the Skillnet Climate Ready Academy, an expert in steering companies of all sizes through the nuances of strategic sustainability. Patrick is an ESG practitioner and he's passionate about empowering organisations to embrace the benefits of early ESG adoption. Today, we'll unpack timelines and mandates of the CSRD, advise on upcoming ESG reporting deadlines, and explore financial support and funding available to facilitate the transition to formulating an ESG framework. We'll also highlight the proactive steps your company can take to align with ESG standards sooner rather than later, ensuring that your company is ready to meet compliance expectations. So, whether you're looking to get ahead of the curve or simply aiming to keep up with the changing landscape, this episode is packed with insights you won't want to miss. We really hope you enjoy.
Welcome to today's podcast. My name is Christelle Rin and I'm the Chief Operating Officer here at HR Locker. I am delighted to have with us today Patrick Meskell. Patrick is an experienced sustainability practitioner with the Skillnet Climate Ready Academy, specializing in developing and delivering training to small, medium and large size companies in strategic sustainability issues, helping organizations to see the value and opportunities in early adoption and planning in all areas of ESG matters. Thank you very much, Patrick, for being with us today.
Thanks very much for having me. Thanks, Crystal.
Patrick, I feel like at the beginning of the podcast, we might have to do a bit of acronyms or explaining acronyms, because I feel like in the sustainability area, we're now with CSRD, ESG, SDGs, and sometimes you get lost in that. So we're all in this world at the moment of seeing CSRD reporting coming over the horizon. We're being told we have to look at ESGs. Do you want to maybe, I suppose, talk us through which companies in Ireland need to start reporting on it? Is it size? Is it financial? Who's it actually applicable at the moment?
Yeah, so I'll suppose backing up a little bit first just to deal with, I suppose, the acronym question. Yeah. So off the bat, CSRD is the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive. What it is an update and a replacement to a pre-existing directive, which was called the Non-Financial Reporting Disclosure. So the CSRD platform is basically anchored in the ESG, which is environmental, social, and governance. And I suppose a tag on to CSRD is ESRS, which is the European Sustainability Reporting Standards. So good question up front is to try and, I suppose, to separate all those different acronyms. There are quite a lot, and this is quite a new space, I suppose, to Irish business and to European business also. So basically what it is CSRD requires basically businesses to disclose how climate and sustainability issues impact their business. And that is, I suppose, known as the outside-in assessment. And then secondly, you've got how businesses impact on, say, people and planet. So that's the inside out impact, and that is the basis then of a term we'll come to later on, which is double materiality. So a business looking at how they have an impact on the outside environment and how the outside environment impacts on their business, and that is the crux basically of CSRD, I suppose, in a nutshell. It's how we impact out and how outside impacts us and how we adapt and mitigate to risks.
Perfect. I think that is the best way I've ever heard it being explained. I'm like, I get it now. I know that there's going to be kind of a phased approach in terms of who's required to report on it. I suppose starting at that kind of larger, I think it's around the 500 employees, and then also your turnover and things like that. And yes, I know that that is imminently coming for bigger companies. But I suppose, you know, if we look at companies who are in those larger companies' supply chains, that's when it starts to become a little bit of a broader scope that most companies are going to have to do something, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so there's a pretty good defined table out there that exists for to help companies understand when it is they come into scope. So pretty much from January 2025, you're looking at large companies, and there's three set criteria that if businesses meet two of those three, it brings them into scope. And those scopes at a high level is basically if they have either 250 employees or more, and or if they have 40 million euros in annual turnover, and or finally, if they have 20 million euros more or more of total assets. So if they meet two of those criteria, that brings them into scope in January 2025. Then moving on to January 26, you've got listed SMEs within the country in Europe. And the exemption there would be for micro companies. So if you've fewer than 10 employees, or your annual turnover is below 20 million euros, you're not coming into the category then. But so the best thing for companies to do is seize that opportunity, start preparing for CSRD now, even if you're not coming to scope until January 2026, because there's several benefits to it. You can make mistakes early, and you can make mistakes without being penalized. You can learn from peers, you can learn from again your value chain, who you might be supplying into, learn what metrics it is that you need to report on. So a couple of areas to advise people on is to like engage with stakeholders early, and stakeholders span a whole wide range of people, so suppliers, customers, staff, management, your board's executive, any of those people, because ultimately they'll all feed into your CSRD journey at some point or another. Recruiting from within, so try and drum up interest early within your business. Don't be looking over the wall into the consultants world right now. CSRD is continually adapting. It's an adapting landscape. While it has settled down some bit in the last 6 to 9 months, it's still in flux at the minute. So leveraging existing data within your businesses, companies have lots of information to hand. Sometimes we're flooded with data, too much data. But if businesses can get a handle on what it is they'll actually be coming into scope for, and start concentrating on how they're tracking their data, how they're acquiring their data, how they manage it, it's going to be a huge advantage for businesses. Establishing what is the internal skills gap right now. So if you've established a team that you're going to have to work on this, establish like what are there gaps in their skills at the moment that they don't have to meet all the requirements of this directive, and invest within, send those people on training courses, get them up to par on the areas that they need to be experts on, and I think that would be a great way for companies to start. And as I said, starting early, making mistakes in a zone where you're not going to be penalised, and by the time you do come into scope, then you'll be hitting the ground running, and you'll have spread the cost also, because there are, as anything new in a business, there's standing up costs. If you start now, you'll be able to spread it out over a longer period of time and feel less pain.
Yeah, and that's a good point, actually. It's kind of like fail early. And like, even I suppose the small things is like when we started on the journey, and I hate that word, but specifically what made us start as a business is 2 years ago, probably a year and a half ago, went to an Enterprise Ireland event, and we're told basically, unless you have a sustainability plan, it's going to affect your funding, it's going to affect everything in your business. So I wrongly, Patrick, went to looked at ESG and thought, okay, well, let's look at our renewable energy and our recycling. And it's completely different to what I actually expected, in a good way. So even just to get that out of the way, and I suppose just to focus on, I would 100% agree with you, it can't just be driven by the top, it has to be driven by the whole company, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And then, so Patrick, if you look at, so there's a lot of funding at the moment. What do you think are kind of some support or some funding? I know you guys do some great training, one that I'm doing at the moment. Do you want to maybe just discuss the different training courses that the SkillNet Climate Ready Academy does?
Yeah, so the SkillNet Climate Ready Academy provides fully funded places for companies, and also part funded places, depending on the mix of training that an organisation takes up with us. So we can cover areas like energy management, which would be like your energy leader. So we've a suite of energy leaders programmes, which would be targeted at like middle to senior management. So we have energy leaders, we have waste and circular economy leaders, we have sustainability leaders, which is the program you're on at the moment, Crystal. And we also have like an introductory pathways type program called the Sustainability Pass. And that's kind of like the first touch point for any business beginning their journey around sustainability planning. It's a access to all type, not requiring any prior experience, any prior level of seniority. The Sustainability Pass is always the first touch point. And then we have people, I suppose, maturing in their journey and then finding their way onto our leaders programs. As I said, part funded in most cases and fully funded in other cases also from Skillnet. Enterprise Ireland, just to give examples outside of our own domain, Enterprise Ireland provide funding for their client companies. Again, we have many of those and a lot of our programs. And then also encourage businesses to engage with their local business chambers. They may or may not have fundings in place, but if there's enough uptake or enough traffic coming their way, it may spur that local chamber into providing greater supports. So yeah, there's definitely options out there. But also, there isn't a cost associated with all types of ESG measures. Some measures can be made with minimal to no cost investments at all. But available of all the opportunities that are out there and the funding paths.
Yeah, and one of the things that on the programme that I think most people have discussed is that it has to be, it can't just be one person flying the flag for ESG or sustainability, right? Who in a company actually needs to be the main driver? You know, does it sit with a specific department, or, you know, who should be picking up the mantle, basically?
Yeah, well, I suppose the onion analogy, there should be a core team within a business at the center of the onion, if you want to call it that. And within that core could be like HR, IT. IT play a huge part in, will play a huge part in CSRD because it's a very data-driven type reporting directive. Management, staff, senior staff, mid-level staff. You will have likely a sustainability team, procurement, production, R&D. It's endless, really. Mm-hmm. But having a core team established is very important. And then building out from that, another analogy I use is, it's going to be like health and safety. You don't just have a health and safety moment once a year and then you revisit it next year. Health and safety, everybody is responsible first and foremost for their own health and safety and the health and safety of others. Businesses have a responsibility to provide a safe working environment. Similarly with sustainability reporting, everybody's going to be feeding into this at every single level. And again, it won't be revisited once a year. It's going to be stitched into the fabric of how businesses operate now and how they operate into the future. So it's establishing a core team, establishing what the skill set is right there within that team, building out that skill set to meet the requirements, the various reporting requirements, and the skills gap are going to be different across many companies. So it's not, again, a one size fits all. It's putting that time in to understand what are your gaps and then trying to backfill them. Identify who are your major stakeholders, be it internal or external, and then also engaging in the stakeholder management process where you're going to actively engage with your suppliers, with your customers, to create like a circular type conversation that never ends. It starts somewhere, but it never ends. It's always going year in, year out. You're going to have to be constantly reviewing within that to see how you can meet the requirements and then better the requirements at. Ultimately, that's the best thing to do. It's the right thing to do for companies to strive for perfection on this.
Yeah, and I suppose the key thing as well, Patrick, is it's not going to be a sticker you get one year. It's a constant evolving practice. One of the things that I found is, wasn't a deliberate thing on our part, but I have found a great benefit from it. We started the Sustainability Task Force. It's about 30% of the employees who actively wanted to participate, which was quite different and nice for me because usually I'm dragging people to be on a task force and I'm like, you've been randomly selected, but actually people volunteered to be on this task force, which was fantastic. So the actual employee engagement side of it has been huge I hadn't expected it as that being the result of it. And one of the things and what I've kind of enjoyed from it is people are coming from all different backgrounds. You know, we've some guys in Spain who are talking about water conservation. That's very important to them. Yeah. I have somebody on it who's would be a massive advocate for being a vegan. And so she wants to maybe do some share some recipes for people and things like that. So it's real outside of the box thinking and things that I would never have thought of. I was thinking, where do we put the recycle bins? So it's actually been a lovely journey from an employee perspective, from an employee engagement perspective, which has been nice rather than us kind of trying to shove standards down people's necks.
Exactly. And again, it's relevant to everybody. It's not just a niche topic that, you know, may interest a small portion. This is a societal shift, this directive. It's the, as it says, it's the environmental, it's the social, and it's the governance piece. So the social and the environmental, in fact, impacts everybody, whether you know it or not, it does. So it's great to see in your organization that you've had that show of interest, because ultimately it's in our own interest to get this right as soon as possible. And it's never going to be right the first time, but as physically soon as possible, is to cut our emissions, support local environment, biodiversity, nature, and then those affected communities further afield, because it's not just on our doorstep.
And I think as well, like we are, I think it's 35% of the workforce now are millennials. We won't go into the generation under that, but their expectation is that you're not greenwashing, that you're actually doing something as a company, right? So they just expect more from your companies now. So you've just got to stand up for it, right? So in terms of proactive measures that people can take across their operation and supply chain, Patrick, any kind of golden bullets? $1 million question.
Yeah, it is. I suppose being sincere, a company being sincere from the off, and actually following through on what it is that they intend on achieving. When engaging with anybody, engage meaningfully, engage early. Don't wait until the 11th hour and then doing a tick box exercise, because we'll come back to bite businesses. Businesses that don't take this seriously will find it quite difficult to operate in the future, because it's going to become too expensive to operate as an unsustainable business in Ireland and in Europe. So being genuine, being transparent, getting in early and engaging in a meaningful manner is probably the key takeaways, I would say, for businesses right now, is take it seriously, because it's kind of like the stick approach now. The carrot has gone. This is the stick approach. We gotta sit up and listen.
Yeah, and you know what I've seen a huge difference is, like, we are part of the supply chain, and like last year we would have been asked for our sustainability statement. You probably could have put anything on it, and people are just like, "That's grand. There's a tick the box exercise." This year's it's a little bit different. People are like, "Okay, well, what's the plan?"
Yeah, and people are saying to us a lot of the time in our programs now that, whereas before evidence of a sustainability statement was required as part of this tender stage, now it's at the pre-qualification stage, and companies are actually doing due diligence on what companies are supplying. And then in addition to that, where you maybe just hypothetically used to carry 5 marks, now it's carrying up to 40 marks out of 100, you know, for companies just to qualify to tender for projects. So it's, as I said a minute ago, companies will struggle to exist in the near future if they don't take this seriously.
Yeah, there's even some, I've seen some kind of bank loans and stuff like that for businesses that you'll get a lower rate if you actually are.
And that's the ESG instrument in a nutshell.
Yeah, and one of the things I think is, it's an interesting shift really. We're talking about sustainability, but what I found is, from a company perspective, is the social side of it and the governance side of things. So we've got the governance, you know, most companies will have some kind of, they should have some kind of governance around sustainability. They're probably, the environmental side of things, they've probably ticked a box, probably greenwashed it a bit, but ticked a box from that side of thing. And the social side of things, that's, and I spoke to you about this earlier, that I was in an event a couple of months ago sitting beside a company who were talking about how they were affecting poverty and human trafficking. And as a professional services company, I was sitting there going, I don't understand how I can affect social issues. So I suppose they don't have to be that huge, right? They just have to be relevant to your company. You just have to start and think about it.
Yeah, and there's the three pillars, and under each pillar there's requirements of, so you've got under the environmental pillar, you've climate action, you've climate change, you've pollution, and companies have to report on matters that impact, that they have impact on within their business. So if you don't have, I suppose, a business that impacts further afield in, say, maybe third world countries, you're not expected to report on that. But with that said, businesses should still be striving to support impacted communities within their vicinity. So they should still want and be able to demonstrate how they're supporting their locality, because they're operating within that area. So they should let the proceeds of profit trickle down into the communities. The profit only approach has no more relevance anymore. Mm-hmm. You have to be meeting the three requirements of environmental, social, and governance.
Yeah, and like I said, I think that companies who think that they can wait until 2025 or 2026, they're going to find it difficult to exist. I would definitely really
and they'll be playing catch up once they do finally make the move.
So I can make the mistakes in the report that I have to send you, and you can my assignment, and you can tell me all the bits I've done wrong.
Exactly.
At this stage, I can afford to fail. But I would definitely. You spoke about it earlier, just in regards, Patrick, to the SkillNet Climate Ready Academy, the courses that you guys currently offer. I can just speak from our own experience that we've done the PASS. I'm doing the
Sustainability Leaders.
Thank you. And I found it good, found it very relevant. And only because I think most people, Patrick, would be in the same shoes as me, that I'm looking at it going, I don't really know what I'm supposed to do here. You know, it's new to me. I think there's some industries who they understand what carbon credits are. They understand that they've always done that. Whereas I'm like, I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to do. So definitely would recommend it to anybody. Patrick, if people want to harass you and look for your information, where is the best place for people to go to look at what you guys currently offer?
Yeah, so I direct people to the climatereadyacademy.ie, and on the website then you can submit an expression of interest, and one of our team will come back to you to discuss the options available to you around funding, part funding or full funding. And also you can see on the page, we've case studies, we've results of testimonials, and we also have our list of programs that we offer. There's staff credentials also in partnership with the University of Limerick that people may be interested in taking on. Businesses can do dedicated in-house programs where we take a group of employees from a single business and deliver, I suppose, bespoke training to them online as well via Zoom on our learning management platform. But climatereadyacademy.ie is the best place to find us, and we'll gladly help you from there.
Thank you so much, Patrick. Really do appreciate it. I hope I get an A in my assignment now. But yes, so if anybody wants to contact Patrick, we'll have all the details in relation to the podcast. So thank you so much for taking the time.
No problem. Thanks so much. It's very enjoyable.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Check us out at hrlocker.com and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Make sure to subscribe to catch the latest episodes on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you would like to feature on a future podcast, get in touch by emailing us at marketing@hrlocker.com.